Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, we open our show with a special report on how local governments are being caught in the middle between the incoming Trump administration's demands for law enforcement to cooperate with federal authorities on mass deportation efforts and a California state law that requires local jurisdictions to do just the opposite, shielding immigrants who have not been convicted of serious crimes. Hear how county supervisors and El Cajon's city council are reacting to this challenge. Then, our newsmaker interview today is with Ray Lutz. He's the founder of Citizens Oversight Projects, a watchdog group in El Cajon concerned with election integrity. After learning that voting machine passwords have been stolen and that voting machines may have been compromised in some states, Lutz's group is working to audit swing states with split ballot results. In other words, those where Kamala Harris lost in the presidential race, but down-ballot Democrats won. So be sure to stay tuned for this very important interview with an East County activist on our show today, where East County matters. San Diego County Supervisors and El Cajon's City Council held discussions on December 10th that could determine the fates of many immigrant residents and set the stage for showdowns among federal, state, and local authorities. San Diego County has an estimated 169,000 undocumented residents, according to the Migration Policy Institute, based on 2019 data. The incoming Trump administration has announced plans to deport millions of immigrants nationwide and is demanding that local authorities cooperate in mass deportation efforts. But a California law, Senate Bill 54, passed during the last Trump term, prohibits state and local jurisdictions from cooperating with federal authorities on deportation, with some notable exceptions for serious crimes. Local authorities are carefully weighing the legal and moral implications of potential actions. El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells, a Republican who took an anti-immigrant stance during his unsuccessful congressional campaign, recently told iNews Source that he believes the Trump administration's stance on mass deportation is right, but he wants the feds to, quote, give me a way that I don't damage my city, damage my police department. On social media, Wells railed against sanctuary city policies as dangerous, claiming such policies allow criminals to roam free in our communities, and he blasted SB 54, also known as the California Values Act. In fact, however, SB 54 does allow police to cooperate with immigration authorities in turning over undocumented immigrants who are actually convicted of serious or violent crimes, such as murder, rape, child abuse, battery, drug crimes, and sex trafficking. State law also allows joint task forces to investigate crimes such as drug trafficking, as El Cajon has done. Mayor Wells' stance on immigrants today is a dramatic shift from 10 years ago, when he spoke to a crowd of 2,000 gathered at a prayer vigil for Christians persecuted by ISIS terrorists. At the vigil in 2014, Wells told local Chaldean Christians to advise their loved ones in Iraq that if they could get to El Cajon, I want to tell them they will be safe here. A growing number of immigrants to El Cajon in recent years are also fleeing violence and persecution from places such as Afghanistan, Syria, and Central America. Some are undocumented immigrants, and others have come on special immigrant visas, a status that Trump also wants to end. At the December 10th City Council meeting, Mayor Wells and Councilman Phil Ortiz introduced a measure asking the council to agree on sending a letter to California Attorney General Rob Bonta seeking clarification on whether federal law supersedes state law, as well as penalties or consequences if El Cajon decides to defy state law and cooperate with the feds. Making matters even thornier for local officials, Trump's nominee for Homeland Security Secretary, Tom Holman, recently threatened to imprison Denver's Mayor Mike Johnston after Johnston said he would resist mass deportation of migrants and encourage people to protest against mass roundups in their communities. I'm willing to put him in jail, Holman said of Johnston, a Democrat, on Fox News. But El Cajon Councilman Gary Kendrick, a Republican, strongly disagrees with having the city's police round up immigrants who have broken no laws other than how they entered the country. While he said turning over criminals who committed serious crimes to ICE could actually keep citizens, including immigrants, safer, he added during the council discussion, I don't want to see our police dragging kids out of school or church or factory workers, people who are working out there and haven't committed crimes. I could never support that. He said the city's police are already overworked, adding, I don't want to alienate non-criminal, undocumented immigrants. Such actions could have a chilling effect on solving crimes, Kendrick noted, adding, if there is a murder or rape, people aren't going to report it if they think they will be shipped out of the country. And he concluded, we have a lot of minorities, and they're part of the fabric of our community, and we don't want to rip up that fabric. City Manager Graham Mitchell clarified the dilemma. If the federal government requires us to participate in deportation procedures, how do we respond legally and morally to that? He asked, then questioned what the city should do if it had reason to believe an undocumented immigrant was preying on others, but without enough evidence to arrest them. That scenario could open the door to having people deported based on mere accusations. Mitchell then asked, if El Cajon were to defy state law and cooperate with federal immigration officials fully, what would the state do as a penalty to our city or its officers? Councilman Steve Goble asked if the state would indemnify police officers who refused to follow the federal orders. Councilman Ortiz wondered if undocumented immigrants might move into cities with sanctuary policies, further burdening resources. The council agreed to have staff draft a letter to State Attorney General, which will be reviewed by Wells and Ortiz before it goes out. At the San Diego County Supervisors meeting, also held December 10th, by contrast, supervisors voted 3-1 to have the nation's fifth most populous county restrict local cooperation with federal immigration authorities even more than state law requires. The vote prohibits the sheriff from working with ICE to deport people, absent a judicial order. Three Democrats voted in favor, while Republican Jim Desmond strongly opposed the action, and Supervisor Joel Anderson was absent. Immigration enforcement is a federal responsibility, and our county will not be a tool for policies that hurt our residents, said Supervisor Vargas. Nora Vargas added that the policy is designed to ensure local resources are focused on addressing the county's most urgent needs while protecting families and promoting community trust. But Sheriff Kelly Martinez has announced her intent to defy supervisors and follow state law, effectively rendering supervisors' action toothless. She stated, current state law strikes the right balance between limiting local law enforcement's cooperation with immigration authorities, ensuring public safety, and building community trust. The sheriff, a Democrat elected to the nonpartisan office, made clear, the Board of Supervisors does not set policy for the sheriff's office. California law prohibits the Board of Supervisors from interfering with the independent, constitutionally and statutorily designated investigative functions of the sheriff, and it is clear that the sheriff has the sole and exclusive authority to operate county jails. Supervisor Desmond blasted supervisor's action on social media, calling it outrageous, and said he would contact the Trump administration to ensure that illegal immigrant criminals are removed from our neighborhoods. Supervisor's action aligned with those of seven other counties in California, including Los Angeles, the state's biggest city, Associated Press reports. Around 300 people showed up in favor of the San Diego supervisor's resolution, with 200 opposed, KPBS reports, making for an emotional and at times raucous hearing. Though some have blamed sanctuary city policies on increasing crime, in fact, the truth is just the opposite. A 21 study by a University of California San Diego professor concluded that sanctuary counties actually have significantly lower crime rates and stronger economies than those that have cooperated with ICE to deport immigrants. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. And today I am delighted to introduce our special guest, Ray Lutz, who is the founder of Citizens Oversight Projects, or COPS, right here in El Cajon. It is a nationwide watchdog group, and they are in the process of auditing swing state results from the presidential election. So, Ray, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Miriam. Glad to be here.
So I understand from your press release that you're going to be trying to audit ballots in swing states that had split ballots. In other words, where President Trump won, but major down ticket Republicans lost. Can you explain to us why you chose this and what concerns you have?
Sure. Well, there's another way to look at it, too, is where Harris lost, but the Democrat won, you know, in the down ballot race.
Good point.
And so essentially, when we looked over the swing states, we noticed, like, for example, Nevada is a really good case. Nevada went for the Democratic candidate in 2016 and in 2020, and then in 2024 went for Trump. So it was Trump running every time. Of course, we had Hillary Clinton and then Biden. And then for some reason, you know, it went even further. And this time, Trump won. Now, interestingly, if you look at the next race down, which is the Senate race, and sometimes when you look at these states, when you look at the what they call drop-off, you have to look at either the Senate or sometimes the congressional seats or some kind of a statewide contest. And it's important for it to be what I call a strategic control seat contest. And that means, for example, the Congress, a congressional seat in the Congress means more than just whether you like the guy.
Right.
It means that you might either get control or lose control of Congress. So it right. means much more than just that one thing.
Sure.
Whereas if you were electing somebody for the Board of Supervisors and they happen to be a Democrat or Republican, really doesn't matter because they're not going to be controlling some larger body. So that's why when you're in one of these partisan races, you're, you know, a party member or, you know, affiliated with the party, you tend to vote with the party for that down ballot contest along the same lines as who you voted for president.
Yeah, correct. Unless there's something, you know, really outrageous about a candidate, that's usually the case. Go ahead.
Because in 2016, the drop off between the presidential contest and the Senate seat was almost exactly the same, Democrats and Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And the drop off in 2020 was almost the same, Democrats and Republicans. But in 2024, the drop off was really, really large for the Republicans and not unusually large for the Democrats. So some reason we had either, you can look at it a different way. You could look at it as a lot more ballots for Trump than we ever expected, or a lot fewer votes for Harris that somehow got lost, or somehow ballots that got lost for the senator and the Republican yeah. side.
Lost or potentially hacked, I suppose. We yeah. certainly know from, I reported years ago on issues with back then Diebold voting machines, not that they were the only ones necessarily with problems. And I had actually interviewed a whistleblower inside Diebold who explained how these things were rigged by putting in a phony program that was supposed to correct a clock that didn't have any problems with the central tabulators. And everywhere they did this, miraculously, districts that had been Democratic for like 100 years were suddenly flipping Republican in Georgia. That I won a national award for that. And that article led to our Secretary of State in California at the time, Deborah Bowen, banning those particular machines statewide in California because they were very hackable. So I guess this begs the question.
Good job on that, by the way. That was good reporting.
Well, thank you. I'm curious, you know, what kind of voting machines, have you looked into what kind of voting machines were used in the areas where they had this split ticket issue? And do you have any particular reason to believe that any of those machines could have been vulnerable to hacking or more broadly, if there were errors of any sort that accounted for these results, how do you believe those could have happened? I mean, people throwing away yeah. ballots or the old-fashioned way or hacking?
Well, there's several ways. And this election has to be one of the most disconcerting elections that I've seen in a long time, not because I didn't like the results, which I didn't, but because there was so much going on beforehand. And what I mean by that is that the machines were stolen. Mm-hmm. The election management system software was stolen and distributed by Republican operatives.
Interesting. I had not heard that.
In Mesa County, Colorado, the election supervisor was sentenced to 9 years in prison for letting people in and to getting it. Mm. And her, not that I think that was necessarily warranted, but she, you know, we could go on the sidetrack talking about her sentencing and all that. But basically, they did get a copy of the election management system. And they found out, and I have to side with her on the validity of the concern here, the election management system, Dominion in this case, had this additional piece of software, and it's called the Microsoft SQL Server Management Suite. And what that software does is allows you to, just like using a text editor, go into the database and really modify or look at or, you know, browse and fiddle with every single location in the database. And Probably. Without tracking by the EMS. And that was distributed or is distributed by Dominion to every location so that they can, you know, everyone was surprised. Like, these election management systems are supposed to restrict access to that data before it is, you know, election day. And after the polls are closed, you're not supposed to, even though they might be scanning and like putting data into the database, you're not supposed to know what the totals are. Well, certainly if you have that management suite, you can just look at it and see what the totals are. And there would be no reporting and they could change things. So that's item one.
Yeah, I should say we do know also from the reporting I did some years ago that there were some forms of machines where a malicious code could be put in that would start having it count backwards once a certain candidate reached a certain level and it could erase itself. And if this was put on even one memory card in one voting machine, once that was inserted in the central tabulator at Election Central, it could infect it and spread this virus or whatever you want to call it, you know, to reverse votes or change votes in other areas. So the potential for it is certainly very scary. I would have hoped that all these years later, safeguards might have been taken, but it sounds like you're saying in some of these states, it definitely has not been.
This was something that surprised me. I looked into, okay, what was Tina Peters looking into and what was her results? Like, maybe she found something that was interesting. And, you know, even though she was sentenced to prison for 9 years, maybe she still found something that should have been revealed and treated as legitimate information. Mm-hmm. And indeed they did. This was also brought out in the court case called the DeKalb GOP versus Raffensperger in Georgia.
Brad Raffensperger. The same official, we might add, that Trump tried to pressure to change election results, just find, you know, a certain number of votes so he would win.
Right. 11,780. Can you find the 11,780 votes for me? So, yeah, Raffensperger, he, in this case, actually, it was the expert on the side of the DeKalb County GOP, who was saying that they found the passwords to the election management system that had been used for 10 years were the same ones that were there and were used the same way across every single system. And he says just that in itself is just takes your breath away.
It's like when I reported on Diebold, this super secret password here in San Diego at the time was Diebold. Crazy.
The password was a standard password, and they showed how they could find it and use it. And it's the same one that they used during the testing in 2010.
Unreal.
And he said, essentially, the security of these systems is horrible. That's another piece of information. So then there's other things that could happen, though, too. And we're also we're worried about the purging of voters. We're worried about possible just destruction of ballots as they came through the post office. We still have DeJoy in power there running the post office. The post office, I've seen reports on how there are like two classes of workers there. There's the career people who you know care about their jobs because they don't want to lose it. And then there's the temporary workers who really much don't care and they just steal anything that they can find off the shipping belts. They have a lot of theft going on of products. But also that would be fairly easy to misdirect incoming mailed in ballots. That's a concern. So we don't.
So if they knew it was coming from, say, a zip code that has a lot of people in a particular party, that could be done.
So essentially, there's many, many different attack vectors that could be used. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem with these election laws is that if you say, "Well, I'm not sure if this result, it sounds fishy to me. I want to look into it more." And you say, let me take a look at the actual ballots and let me see what happened. They'll go, well, sorry, but you don't have, what is your theory of fraud? You know, what happened? And you say, well, I don't have any proof, but I think it may have happened. And they go, well, too bad. That's not enough. You have to have a real theory and you have to be able to prove it before you can ever look at the data, at the evidence. They're required to save the ballots for 22 months, according to federal law, and yet no one can look at them unless you have a court case. But to get the court case to get past square one, you have to have some sort of an allegation of fraud that you can get past that first dismissal phase.
Wow. So are you saying that the states are not cooperating, that so far they're not providing you the access to look at these, or any of them allowing it?
Right. Well, so we've given up on trying to get to the paper ballots. And luckily, what we have now is images being produced by the machines, pretty much all the machines in the top areas of the country use technology that creates an image, a picture of a digital picture of each side of the ballot
Yeah, and you've got
first.
a so we should credit you here. You've got a software program that you invented specifically to audit these election results, I understand.
Right, we developed this platform called Audit Engine, and it's simple in concept. It just has so many different, details you have to deal with. But essentially, we take those ballot images that were made by the voting system, and we look them over very carefully, one by one, and look at where the bubbles are, or read the text on BMD ballots with optical character recognition capability, and then we reconstruct our own tabulation for the election, and we can compare ballot by ballot with the results from the voting system and see where we differ. So we can boil it down to the exact ballots where either maybe we made a mistake or they made a mistake. And usually we find a lot.
Really? So what happens if you find mistakes? Is there a timeline for this? Is there any potential, I guess, most outlandish result? Suppose you found enough errors that it would have changed the outcome of the presidential election. Is it too late to reverse this?
Not yet. In fact, in some places, well after a certification, they had to reverse it because they found that they had, in Monmouth County, New Jersey, which is one place we audited, they had accidentally read in seven thumb drives more than once,
Oops.
and the software wasn't sophisticated enough to notice. And so what it did was just happy-go-lucky, added in seven thumb drives worth of ballots as if they were brand new. And we were able, because the images are then identical between those two, uploadings of data, we're able to find exactly which images were put in twice and
Twice,
take them out. So it's kind of nice that we can take them out without having to do the hand count. But
Very
they went
interesting.
ahead and did the hand count of I believe four contests, and one of them was completely overturned and changed the results. That happened after certification. Okay. Now, of course, it depends on the laws, and in this country, for the president, we have a very strict timeline because the president gets sworn in and all that.
So it
And
would have
once
to
he
be
gets
done before January 20th. Is that the final deadline, or is it
Hard to say what would happen. Like,
the court challenges it, yeah.
let's say that we were late and we discovered that there was massive fraud in the presidential election and that we could prove. What would happen? Like, would there be uproar and that the presidential contest would have to be rerun or something? And maybe, or would we just say, well, he's already in office. It doesn't matter how he got there, even if it was fraudulent, it's okay. Now,
Yeah, I could see
that's
it being challenged all the way up to the Supreme Court on something like
I
that.
it's hard to know what would happen. But realistically, like from a scientific standpoint, you would say, no, it would not stand, and they would want to go back and make sure that it was done right.
Well, certainly if we
But
find it before the 20th, then,
if you're in the political realm, you may just say, well, Trump won, even if he lies about it, it's okay.
Well,
And
yeah,
so you
I'm reminded of the Bush versus Gore one where the Supreme Court stopped the count in Florida, but I think some newspaper later audited it, didn't they? If I remember right, and it actually
Right.
would have gone the other way had they given allowed a little more time for the
Had they
counting.
just recounted, been allowed to continue the recount, then they would have actually gotten the results from the recount. And why not do
Right.
that?
Right.
But it was looking like it was taking a long time. And in that case, it did actually go into the next year, I believe. I can't remember how long they delayed things, but it was delayed a little bit. Yes. All we can do is the best we can. And some people say, well, we want to hand count all the ballots. Well, the reality is you can't get to the paper ballots to do hand counting, so forget it.
Since states control election laws, I don't even think you can pass, even if you had a willing Congress, can you even pass
No,
legislation that would mandate, say, saving paper ballots or something?
well, they do have to save the paper ballots, and we're trying to, and they're supposed to save the images too, because they're considered electronic records. They're considered records, and they said electronic records also have to be saved, and ballot images are electronic records too, but somehow some places, especially in Florida, don't quite understand that, so they've been destroying them.
You mentioned briefly before voter suppression, and that's gone on, for years. The journalist Greg Palast has documented that for a long time. Efforts, I think the first place he revealed it was in Florida, where they were throwing black voters off of the rolls left and right through a caging scheme. And now his latest investigation in this election was that many thousands, tens of thousands at least, in one state alone, were thrown off, mostly black military people who were deployed overseas, and they would send something, and and you had to come in and challenge it in person, which of course you can't do if you're in Iraq or something. And so a lot of these military members of our armed forces were denied their voting rights along with other people. And surprise, surprise, these were pretty much all people of color with common names for people of color. So it's gone on for years, and it just doesn't seem to get any better. If anything, it seems to be more pervasive, unfortunately.
And it certainly did happen in this election. It's one of our concerns. We saw during the election people saying, oh, this is a huge turnout this time. People are in lines, they're coming early. We've had the largest turnout ever on the early vote. And yet we have the final tally as fewer votes than in 2020.
That's a really troubling question. Where'd they all go? And I mean, unless
Yeah,
you had a bunch of
that's
people
where
lined
did
up who
they?
really weren't registered or something, but where did they go?
So we're looking at also different ways. One of them is to take a look at who voted in this election and who the registered voters are, and look at those lists of registered voters, and it has their history, their voting history. And was there someone in there who voted consistently year after year after year and suddenly stopped voting? That
Which
would be
happened.
interesting to find, because why did
Yeah.
they suddenly stop? And is there a lot of those? So there was one theory that was floating around, which was the bullet ballot theory, which means that there was only a vote for Trump on it, and that would be making up that difference that I mentioned before, where Trump had a lot more votes than Harris did all of a sudden, say in Nevada. But it also was the case in the other swing states. And he, this guy who was researching it or making the claim, said that it was because of these bullet ballots where only one vote on the ballot and that for Trump and nothing else. Well, we
Interesting.
looked into that and we found that that didn't really hold water. There was additional votes. A lot of them moved from what used to be the second tier. And one more kind of confusion factor here was the Robert F. Kennedy situation, where, as you know, Robert F. Kennedy dropped out and then joined with the Trump campaign
But his
endorsing
name
him.
was still on the ballot a lot of places.
And his name was in a lot of places on the ballot. In Wisconsin, it was on the ballot. In Nevada, it was not on the ballot. So in California, it was. So when
Did you
you
see a
compare,
trend in the places where it was on the ballot?
it seems like there may have been, like if you say, gee, he had a lot of support, and then you wonder, well, would the people who were supporting RFK Jr., would they just go with him and go with Trump or not? And the theory was, no, the Kamala Harris campaign said, no, we're not worried about it. It's not going to change the complexion of the contest, but it may have. It may have been the difference maker there.
Well, it could be. And I mean, in all fairness, we should say there could be a reason why someone would choose to vote for Trump but vote Democratic the other ways. It could be something where they either didn't care for the Harris policies. It could be they didn't want to vote for a woman or a black person. We just don't know.
Yeah, that could have been it. And so it isn't absolutely implausible what happened. But it looks fishy because of these things that we just didn't see before. These big drop-offs are unusual.
It should be looked into, certainly. We need to pause for station ID. You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice. And now we're back with Ray Lutz from Citizens Oversight Projects here in East County.
This is why my feeling is we need to be able to have consistent review, in-depth review of every election by independent people, and not just rely upon. And one thing that gets me, I got to say, I'll tell you, is the very, very early calling of these races before any kind of review has been done of audits or anything else to make sure that everything was okay. We know that the machines can be hacked. We know that the code was stolen. We know that the machines were stolen. We know that there was break-ins during this time. We know that there was talk by Trump saying we don't need to worry about the votes. We've got it, we've got this thing covered. And with all of these
He didn't seem to
factors
be
in mind,
campaigning very hard compared to the Harris campaign, which was troubling.
when you get all these factors together, you're troubled. But then also, you should be not worried about being troubled or not. You should say, look, I know that it can be potentially hacked, and we have to go through these other steps to make sure that it's true
Absolutely.
before we say, yeah, everything is done. We had a lot of people from the left actually unwilling to do any further review. Harris didn't want to review anything.
Yeah, they don't want to look like sore losers, but yet they could be victims of a colossal fraud. So it's astounding to me. They would not want to. I mean, Trump certainly went through all of his legal challenges with 62 court cases in the last election, all of which he lost, but he had a perfect right to do those challenges, not to gin up people to attack the Capitol, but and scream election fraud, but certainly to go through the challenges to make sure that, he felt all steps have been taken to make sure the election was fair. And so why the Democrats won't do the same thing, especially when you have knowledge of things like codes for voting machines and passwords that have been hacked and perhaps shared, is just astonishing.
Well, it actually brings up almost an unbelievable, unthinkable thing, which is that it's kind of like the child saying, did you clean your room? And he says, don't look in the closet.
Sweep it under the,
Yeah, is everything just
Unreal.
piled into the closet? I mean, I did
Unreal.
that once as a kid. Does that mean you should look in the closet,
Yes.
or should you just say everything is fine? Well, the Democrats are saying, everything is fine and don't look in the closet. It kind of makes me wonder if they've been sometimes, over the line on doing election manipulation themselves.
Well, it's certainly possible to go both ways. We
Yeah.
could definitely concede that point.
I wondered, in the primary when it was at South Carolina, when, Bernie Sanders had a lot of head of steam. And all of a sudden, everyone dropped out, and Biden suddenly was ahead. And this was in a state with old machines that they could fully manipulate. And I was really kind of concerned about that. So it could be that. But they've said that election denial, and I have to say that, like I was saying, that when you do these court cases, you have to come up with some sort of a conspiracy theory of sorts to say we think this happened. And therefore, we get to look at the ballots. Well, if you do that, and they say, well, because you don't have standing in the state, or because you don't have, it isn't a good enough theory, and so forth, and we're not going to look into it, that doesn't count as a legitimate loss. And a lot of the cases that the Trump people brought forward, they didn't get a chance to look at the actual data or anything in order to prove it.
Can you find people in those states to challenge this with your organization?
Well, one of the reasons that we did the split ticket thing, and I want to mention that a little bit more, is because we're trying to be nonpartisan. So you can look at this either way. So, like, if we look at Arizona, Trump won Arizona, but Kari Lake lost. So it would be nice if we could, we can't get to the ballot images very easily in Arizona. It would be nice if we could get maybe Carrie Lake, because she has a special position as a candidate, to be able to say, please give us the ballot images because we want to research them. There may be some strings attached, but we could still do our audit of that area
I
with the
mean,
concept that she was ripped off. And the
yes.
Democrats are saying, well, we got ripped off because Trump probably manipulated it. And so both sides are saying, well, we're interested. And so whenever it's a split ticket, you have interest from both parties. That's what it,
Sure.
that's why we're looking at that.
Very, very good point. And we should certainly say that even if it turns out the results were perfectly legitimate, if nothing else, it makes people feel a little bit more comfortable that their votes were counted and that they just have to go and change their strategies for next time. And then if there was fraud or manipulation or votes lost, then something should be looked at for before the next elections. I'm certainly trying to challenge this one, but over the long haul to say, what do we need to change in these states so that this doesn't keep happening over and over and over again, which is a challenge, when you have one party controlling a lot of things there. But as you've noted, it could be used to manipulate either side. And so we should really all stand for election integrity and wanting to be sure that all votes are counted accurately.
And one of the things that I was kind of interested in trying to wheedle out was like, say, the Joe Rogan interview, which was a real big deal. And I was kind of hoping that Kamala Harris would be interviewed by him. And because it got, it's like 35 million views, and I don't care how many rallies you have, it's hard to make up for that. So the question is, did that have a big impact? Now, if it did, it would be impactful everywhere, not just in swing states. And it seems like this drop-off that we're seeing is only in swing states. And somehow those were targeted for this. And so
Good point.
the Joe Rogan interview didn't seem to have any impact in California. In fact, here, the down ballot race got more than Trump did. They didn't like Trump even more than the Republican down ballot. But it's hard also to know because here you had RFK Jr. on the ballot, so it could have been split up that way.
Well, I'm also curious, how secure do you believe our voting machines are that we're using in California and particularly right here in San Diego?
Not very secure because these are the Dominion machines that have that piece of back door, that software that produces a back door. Plus, as you may know, we sued San Diego County in 2016 for the fact
Remember.
that they were not auditing 285,000 ballots, and we won. But then they changed the law statewide that says, it's okay to leave those out. So we have a really,
Yeah, I
what
remember
looks
that.
like on surface, a good audit. But when you dig down, you realize that, oh, okay, well, they're only doing, and now we have about 90% of the people voting by mail in California. And so if you take out half of those, it's like 45% of the votes are not being audited.
Yeah, it is frightening. I mean, they do at least have some safeguards that some other states may not have. For instance, they'll call you and tell you when your ballot was received. They would call and tell you when it's supposedly been counted. But I suppose what we don't really know is, was it counted the way that you cast your vote or not? Or could it have
Yeah,
been changed?
those are good features, and those sometimes those have been brought in.
But at least you have a chance to cure and correct. If they somehow didn't get your vote, you could
Yeah.
hear your ballot, you could go in on election day and ask for a provisional or something. So there's
They
we have some
tend to be good
safeguards.
that way. But in California, we still can't get the ballot images, and our current attorney general has said that they're not public records that can be requested. San Francisco says, well, we don't agree with you, Attorney General. And so they say we're going to do it anyway. So San Francisco has been publishing their ballot images, and there's been no harm done.
Yeah, so there's
And
nothing to
so,
stop a county from doing it. It's just a question of, but the state isn't going to make them do it.
the state's not going to make them do it, and so they're saying that you're not obligated to do it and you shouldn't do it, is what they say. Whereas other states like Georgia have now been putting all of the ballot images up on their website for every single county, and they have 159 counties. It's not a small project there.
How do
We
you
only
know
have
that those
58.
are real, that they didn't just take one and make a bunch of copies of it and put it up to make it? Are they numbered or something? Is there a way that you can
No.
tell? Obviously, they don't put voters' names on there. So how do you really know for sure that those images they loaded up are accurate?
You don't, unfortunately, at this time. This is one of the sort of bugaboos we've been trying to solve. There are ways to solve it. The election machines themselves are supposed to have cryptographic security in them by the standard called FIPS 140-2. And FIPS 140-2 says you should have a hardware, basically, it's a hardware chip. It's very small, but it basically essentially produces internally a private key that no one knows and a public key that goes with it. And so you can have absolute certainty that any ballot that was produced can be indexed back to the machine that actually produced it. So that way you cannot produce, you can't basically create images that did not come from that machine. However, that only secures it from the point of scanning to when we would look at them. And it does not say that another batch of ballots was not put in and scanned or scanned twice or,
It's
you
such a tough
take.
thing. Even before they had all this electronic stuff, there was election fraud way back when. Decades ago, they had a box of ballots found burned in a field out here in Potrero. We certainly know there's been, in other cities, Chicago, the dead people voting and the
Well,
the ballot box stuffing. So it's really a tough thing to figure out what.
it's very tough, and it's an interesting like area of technology because you have to try to balance everything in this equation. On
True.
one side, you need to have complete privacy, and anybody's vote has to be kept absolutely secret, so you can't track it back to the person.
Right.
On the second track, you want to be able to secure them so that even election officials can be untrusted individuals and not be able to alter anything.
To me, what's so frightening about the whole electronic voting, though, is that in the past, while you could have the kinds of fraud I talked about, it was limited. Only to the number of people you could rope in, only to very small geographic areas, usually a precinct, maybe a city. But with the electronic manipulation, you have the potential to alter entire states or regions, counties or states, which is really quite frightening because you can really literally change the outcome of a presidential election or a Senate election, these very, very important seats that affect all of our futures.
You're right in that if you didn't have certain controls in place, that would certainly be possible. On the other hand, with the electronics, you can set up certain controls. And I'm pointing at Venezuela. Venezuela, remarkably, has some really good voting machines. And they produce a paper tape with a QR code at the bottom that says everything that was on it. And they went back, got all of those paper tapes from
Nice.
the machines, and were able to add them up and prove that the guy who was claiming to want to continue in office, on a permanent basis, did not win. But he still went on. Actually, I haven't followed up on that to know whether Maduro or Gonzalez were in there at this point. But they basically just said it wasn't a matter of proving it. They just announced that the guy won, and they made up numbers. At the final level, like at the very top, like Associated Press says, such and such, so and so wins, and we've called it for so and so, and then everybody just goes with that, and
Well,
they
at the
don't
local
check it.
level, we've had races that were called and later got overturned. I mean, it's happened before. We've had races that seemed to be, in the tank for somebody, and then all of a sudden some late ballots would come in and it would flip. And they simply certified the person who actually won, not the person who declared
Yeah, that's
victory or where the
important.
media said they won. So I've never understood why is this such a big deal if we get more information later, at least before the certification deadline, then it should be a no-brainer that of course you're going to say, hey, we were wrong. This is the real winner. It's just crazy.
So our press release that we put out was announcing that we are going to be looking at and doing about maybe six audits in like sort of randomly chosen in states of counties that have this split ticket and down the drop off between the president and the next ballot down and a split ticket kind of arrangement and seeing what we find. And it's amazing how much we do find with these ballot image audits, whether it be a misconfiguration error or a or I should say a configuration error or basically human error as they were doing things, putting in more ballots, or it may be that we will find substantial fraud. You have to add into this the Elon Musk part of the equation, where he was, you know, basically bribing people to vote their way, saying that there would be some sort of $1 million payoff, and people going, okay, well, maybe I want $1 million. And all the lies and misinformation. Now, that's sort of the misinformation, the information warfare phase of the election.
Yeah, so that's another whole issue.
Yeah, I like to break it up into the sort of the pre-election rigging, where you try to rig stuff, purge voters, set up the, you know,
yeah,
change
give people
the
phony
districts.
Election dates and phony election polling places, that kind of
stuff.
Well,
that's downstream. This is way upstream when you're figuring out where the districts are and so forth. So you're
gerrymandering
the election. Then you get closer and you have information warfare. You're lying about each other and you're trying to. Then during the actual election, you're right, where they say, well, you're. For you, the election day has been postponed for a week, and you know.
Yeah, or basically the power suddenly went out, and after it came back up, oh, you know, the results were completely different.
Yeah,
that happened in some county in Ohio where that happened a few elections ago.
Yeah, Cuyahoga County has
Cuyahoga,
a lot of
that's
history.
Right.
That's the Cleveland
Infamous.
Area,
mm-hmm.
And so it's and then so during the election, like and then there's a lot that could go on there. As I say, diverting ballots and during the postal service, maybe forging ballots and putting them in the mix. Lots of things could happen. Then you have the actual election and actual counting of the votes and possibly changing the results within the machines. And then they would report out something that they didn't see. Well, that's why this ballot image audit will catch at least that part. If they change the numbers in the actual tabulation and it doesn't match the images, then we'll catch that. But as you say, if they change the images too, we're not going to catch it.
Then you won't. Yeah, it's really frustrating that there's no way to be 100% sure on this. And we should note that what's not happening is that despite all of Trump and the right wing drumming up hysteria against immigrants, we've seen almost no cases of undocumented people voting in the whole nation. That's a much ado about nothing, basically. Same with dead people voting. It's a rarity. Far more common is the like you say, the booting people of color off the voting rolls, or voter suppression, voter intimidation tactics, and all of that. And now potentially, literally, electronic rigging and tampering and changing of votes. That's the real election fraud that we should be worried about.
There is some cases that come up where it's usually Republicans doing this, by the way, that either do ballot harvesting and either before people have voted, they go out and pick them up at delivery points and then open them up and vote and then forge a signature, if even a signature is required. And then the other one is after they're voted, maybe go by and say, yeah, I'm your happy like delivery person. I'm here to pick up your ballot. Then they steam them open and change them. And that exact latter case happened in the North Carolina 9th Congressional District. And it was a Republican operative doing it.
We should note that there's been cases, too, of Republicans being victims of this. I don't know about Democrats rigging it. If it's happening, I haven't seen the proof of it. But I do recall a few years back, there was a case that I believe it was Palace uncovered, where in a primary, a Republican, a primary election, it was found that votes had been changed to favor one Republican over the other. So, you know, if you're a Republican, you want your votes to count. You know, if someone's sitting out thinking, hey, I'm cool with this because it's my party doing it, my guys.
Yeah, right.
Well, maybe not. It might not be your first choice in the primary election there.
There was in Pennsylvania, I think, where they had two Democrats on the ballot, and they were blatantly stuffing the ballot box with ballots.
Well, it's been certainly happened years ago in Chicago when you had the political machine there, and there was definitely, you know, the ballot box stuffing and voting of dead people. That was long before the electronic options it came along. So it certainly can happen. Historically, it has happened, but it just seems to me we need robust legislation at some point federally and in states to protect against as many of these things as one can possibly protect against, no matter which party would be favored by it.
The tricky part about that, I mean, we sent a letter to the Department of Justice, Merrick Garland. Please take steps to provide oversight of this election. You know what? The Department of Justice should have a role.
They should.
And yet, any department that you set up, and there is the Election Assistance Commission, completely gutless at the federal level because it's just voluntary guidelines. But the Department of Justice requires that they save the ballots. They don't really have any review process where they review things, but they should. If they did, then could they be corrupted? Well, yeah, well, I think so, because Trump is now putting in someone who controlled the Department of Justice.
I was just going to say, who wants to take vengeance on Trump's political enemies? And would they go a step further if they had the power to order states to change their voting processes? Would we might we see our fair elections in California, or generally considered fair elections in California, being changed to something that we might not like? So it is a sticky wicket, so to speak. When
it
you
all
open
it comes down, like, no matter who was elected, they think it's just fine. They think that they were elected and everything was fine. When you're not elected, that's when you start to wonder. And in this case, there is a lot to wonder about. There's a lot of fishiness going on in this election. I can't tell you, you know, right now what happened, but I do think it warrants additional review. And so that's why we're, you know, doing this project. And we're hoping that people will, you know, visit the site, citizensoversight.org, that they'll take an interest in auditengine.org is another website they can visit and learn about our platform.
Can they donate as well, or volunteer
oh, yeah,
to help
of
with
course.
That effort?
There's donation opportunities on the site. Just press the donate button.
Again, that's citizensoversight.org.
Yeah, that's very helpful. I think it's /donate if you want to go directly there. But then we have also some opportunities for people who are detail-oriented, and they don't have to be very advanced. Some of it is just a mapping process where we have an election that we need to configure on Audit Engine, and we need to know where the bubbles are. And so we go through each ballot, and you just have to click on the bubble and assign it. It's sort of detailed work, but it's not hard. It's just, you know.
And you can do this remotely from anywhere, or do you have to go to the state?
Yeah, we need people to help us with that, especially when we get more elections going. And then there's also opportunities for those people who are good with spreadsheets and being kind of like data sleuths, to be able to take a look at the data and wonder, like, what would happen if this was manipulated, and how can I detect it? Like I was saying, like, if we check who voted and we check, well, this person has voted in every election up till now and somehow they stopped. Is there a lot of people like that? Were they purged? Do we want to check with them? Like, did you actually vote?
Yeah, maybe they were in the hospital or something, but still. How do you, so you would actually reach out to individual voters and ask them, did you vote?
That might be necessary, because in order to find out what happened, we find out that there's a big block of people who tend to vote but didn't, and then we interview some of them, and they say, you know, I did vote. I don't know what happened. And so that would be where we would be able to get sniffing down the trail and trying to find out what happened, because we really don't know. We know that there was a lot of glee on the Republican side about this election. But again, we're nonpartisan. We're trying to, we do this every election, right? So the 2020, we did the same thing. And people were probably saying, well, why are you doing that? You're siding with the Republicans, you're election deniers. No, we're not. We're just trying to look into what the facts are about the election. And we're still interested.
Yeah.
Like, we're still interested to find out if indeed they were blocked because they couldn't get a case to be, you know, go all the way to an evidentiary hearing and to investigate the details. Then, you know, we hear on left media, oh, they're just election deniers, everything was fine. But we don't actually know that unless we actually look at it. And a lot of times they didn't go that far.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're interested in keeping that nonpartisan view. That's why we're doing the split tickets. We got both sides hopefully staying interested in this. And let's just get to the truth of the matter.
Yeah, well, it's great that you're doing that, Ray. I'm going to let you have the final word here. We are just about out of time today. What else would you like our audience to know about the election results and what COPS, or Citizens Oversight Projects, based right here in El Cajon, is doing to try to protect the integrity of our votes?
Well, it's taken a while and we're still working on learning, like what is going on and what do people do with audits. And first, we were very much thinking, well, they're doing internal audits and that should be a really good thing. If we just watch that very carefully, then we'll make sure that they're checking the paper and that they've got the results right. And then we learned that there was quite a bit of cooperation amongst the election officials, especially in California. They have the California Association of Clerks and Election Officials that meets on a regular basis. And they actually, if you will, conspire to try to make things easier for themselves. And, there's some merit in that, I guess, save money, et cetera. But they also tend to be wanting to degrade how much of an audit they do. And then internally, we find that people doing the audit are trying to fix things like they do for everything else, but you're not supposed to fix things during the audit. So you're supposed to actually report out if there was failures and not just fix them. And we get very, very often audits that say everything was clean, no problem whatsoever, zero. And so then you will go, well, nothing is ever that good. So, something's going on. So we started there, and then we're finally at ballot images. And I think this is kind of the best chance for the public to have independent audits of any kind. Because we can get at this data now, but it's still restricted to some extent in many places, and we're still struggling that way. But I think it's a good course of action to go this way. We've made a lot of progress on understanding it and being able to deal with all of the various, many, many nuances and details with getting them done from the different manufacturers, the different areas. Every county is different. Some states are not like that. Some have every county do the same thing, like in Georgia and North Carolina. They're doing all this everything the same, and it helps. It helps that, and they're learning more. We welcome people to join. We have an email list. If you want to join in the email list, just send me a note at raylutz@citizensoversight.org.
That's LUTZ.
I'll add you to the list, and we have maybe 300, 400 people. Discussing election integrity issues, nonpartisan. And so I'll put you in that way. And then, of course, as I said, you can donate or donate your time.
Sounds
Thank you.
great. Well, Ray, I really want to thank you for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And for those listening on radio, if you tuned in late and you want to hear the rest of this interview, we will also be posting the podcast on our news site at eastcountymagazine.org. Thanks, Ray.
Thank you.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.